When you meditate, you're watching your mind. So you want to give yourself a good mind to watch. Good, not in the sense of being smart and book learning, more in the sense of having good qualities of the heart, a mind that's used to acting on impulses for generosity, virtue, goodwill. Because that kind of mind is easy to watch. You want to understand the different steps and the processes of how it creates a thought, how it creates a state of being, state of becoming. It's a lot easier to watch when it's creating good states of becoming, acting on good thoughts. Because it can be hard to see all the nefarious intentions you usually give into if that's your habit. Years back, I was teaching a meditation retreat, co-teaching a meditation retreat. And one afternoon, one of the retreatants just started breaking down and crying. It was really freaky. He was heaving deep sobs. And everyone else in the room was sitting very quiet as if nothing were happening. I found out later, one, that he was a former drug dealer, and somehow sitting and getting the moment really quiet, it came to him how many lives he had ruined. The other thing I learned was that this is a common occurrence in meditation retreats. Take people right off the street with no further training, no basic training in virtue, no basic training in generosity. And things come up. This is why John Sawat was so right that other time he was teaching the meditation retreat at IMS. The people were really grim. They said they're grim because they don't have any good background in virtue, no good background in generosity. Part of it, he said, was when you have practiced generosity and practiced virtue, you gain some confidence in the Buddha, that this path he's teaching is a path of happiness. But also, as I said, if you are used to acting on good intentions, and when you want to understand the process of how an intention is formed, and the internal dialogue that goes around it, it's a lot easier to watch when the intentions have been good. Which is why an important part of the meditation is not simply sitting here knowing how to stay with the breath, but living a life of being generous, being virtuous, and developing goodwill for all beings, and perfecting these good habits as skills. In other words, you want to get it right. Because after all, you're going to be trying to develop a path that is composed of right factors, everything from right view to right concentration. And they all have to be approached as skills. So you're not just good, but you're also inquisitive into what it means to be really good, to act on good intentions. So they have the best possible results. Skill and generosity goes beyond simply the impulse to be generous. You try to develop the right attitude toward the act of giving a gift. You try to develop the right motivation. You try to give gifts that are appropriate. And you try to find good people to give them to. So that act of generosity really does generate happiness. You may have read that list of the different kinds of motivation you may have. It starts out with, I'll get this back, sometimes hoping to get it back with interest. Later in this life, or maybe in the next life. That's the lowest motivation. It does count as a good motivation. The Buddha says it leads to one of the lower levels of the sensual heavens. But there are higher motivations. Simply the fact that you reflect on that giving is good. It's a good thing to do. Or that when you see that there are people who are lacking things that you have, and you have more than enough, it's not right that you don't share. That's an even higher motivation. When you see that Giving makes your mind serene and joyful, all the way up to it's a natural ornament to the mind. In other words, it's just a natural expression of the mind without your thinking about what you're going to get in return. So you can work on your motivation. You can work on your attitude. You're not just going through the motions. You think something really important, well, good will come from this act of generosity. You give gifts that are appropriate. It's interesting when the Buddha measures the merit that comes from a gift or the goodness that comes from a gift. He never talks about the monetary value of the gift, aside from saying that it's good to give a gift that when you're thinking about things that you might use, you give it at least as good as the things you'd ordinarily use. But you can be proud of the gift afterwards. In other words, you stop and think about what it means to be generous and how generosity can give rise to happiness. And as you develop that skill, you get more thoughtful. You see implications in things that you may not have thought of before. The same with the precepts. In the beginning, you simply abide by the rules. And then you find that there are times when it's difficult to abide by the rules. And so you figure out how to stick to the precept, yet at the same time not cause yourself any needless harm or cause anyone else any needless harm. The primary example is the fact that you know some information that somebody might want to abuse and they ask for it. You've got to figure out some way of not giving the information, but at the same time not lying. That develops your ingenuity. And the simple fact that you're keeping the precepts means that, one, you have to keep the precept in mind. Two, you have to be alert to your actions. And three, you really have to do your best to withstand any impulses to break the precepts. Mindfulness, alertness, ardency. These are going to be skills you're going to need as you meditate. And finally, with goodwill. As you spread thoughts of goodwill, you stop to think about what does it mean, may all beings be happy. And you realize you're wishing for them to create the causes for happiness. At the same time, you're learning how to resist any impulse to ill will. And you learn to recognize ill will for what it is. Sometimes it can dress itself up as righteous anger and desire for justice. But wanting to see somebody suffer, no matter how bad that person has been in the past, does count as a form of ill will. So you've got to be careful, and you learn how to watch your mind this way. And you learn what it means to create a state of goodwill. It's not a natural expression of your innate nature, because it's just as easy to have ill will for other people as it is to have goodwill. Because we're trying to take this human goodwill that we have, which tends to be partial, and we're trying to make it universal. That requires verbal fabrication, mental fabrication, all the components of a good state of concentration. So these are the traditional forms of punya, which is usually translated as merit, but it's also, I think, better translated as goodness. And all too often they're treated as something totally separate from the practice of meditation, but they're very much entwined, because they prepare the mind and they develop good habits, particularly the habit of trying to do something well, get it right. I was reading a while back a strange idea that the hope of getting things right is a major cause for stress and suffering. Therefore, you should learn how to relax around it, let it dissolve away, and just be okay with things as they are, and not try to impose your ideas of perfections on things. That may be based on a misreading of the Satipatthana Sutta, where it talks about seeing feelings arising and passing away, discerning. A feeling of pleasure, discerning a feeling of pain, neither pleasure nor pain. Seeing mind states arising and passing away. Restricted mind, unrestricted mind. Concentrated, unconcentrated. It makes it sound like you just watch whatever's going to happen without wanting it to be good or bad. But when you look at the list of feelings the Buddha talks about, they're feelings of the flesh, feelings not of the flesh. Feelings of the flesh are things that happen pretty much willy-nilly. But feelings not of the flesh have to do with your desire to practice. A pleasure not of the flesh is the pleasure of concentration. That's not going to happen on its own. A pain not of the flesh comes from your desire to gain awakening. That's a good pain. It's a pain that can help motivate you. Of course, equanimity not of the flesh would be the equanimity that comes from getting to the fourth jhana. Again, that's something you have to do. In terms of mind states, they're usually paired, concentrated, unconcentrated, released, unreleased. The implication being that an unskillful mind state is there, you want to switch it over to its skillful counterpart. So you are trying to get it right. After all, the duty of mindfulness is not simply to watch things arise and pass away. But if there's something you know that is skillful, that's not there in your mind, you try to give rise to it. You're mindful to give rise to it. Once something has arisen this way, then you try to maintain and make sure it doesn't pass away. This is called mindfulness as a governing principle. So you are trying to get it right. But you're learning to find joy in getting it right. You don't treat it as a chore. As with any skill, there comes a sense of pride, a sense of self-esteem, and it's healthy pride, healthy self-esteem. That's all to the good. Sometimes people like to quote that passage from a John Munn's poem, where he talks about one of the final things you have to get over as you practice the path is the desire to be good. The implication being, as they say, well, you can let go of that one pretty early on. But that's not what he says. Look at somebody who really tried to make something good out of himself. Everything in the training, from the most minor rules all the way up to the practice of liberation, he tried to master it. As his students said, he made himself totally Dharma. And he didn't do that by not trying to be good, not trying to get it right. It was trying to get it right that put him in a position where he could finally let go of right and wrong. Because he mastered things, he brought his mind to completion. In John Lee's words, he let go as a rich person, not as a pauper. So it's perfectly okay to want to get it right. In fact, we've got to do that. This is a path with right and wrong factors. If you want to be on the path, you've got to get it right. The trick is learning how to enjoy it as you do it. And as you develop the right attitude, it does become a joy. You can look at your behavior, you can watch your mind, and it's a good mind to watch. There's a sense of satisfaction that comes. That is entirely in line with the practice. As the Buddha said, when you see that you've done something right, take joy in that fact, and then continue training. That's the right attitude to have.